Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 28th day of May, 2020. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Thank you for downloading, sharing, spreading the word on social media, telling your friends, grabbing your friends' phones, and just subscribing them to it. Just all I ask is for a foot in the door of their head, and I'll wrestle the rest of my body through. Let's see, lots of stuff to get to, tons of things going on. We got a great speech from House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. The House is now voting by proxy. The House is now voting absentee. The House of Representatives, we're paying them almost $200,000 a year and they can't be bothered to show up. You know, if they got rid of direct deposit and made them show up to collect their checks, I bet a lot of them would show up. But as it stands, thanks to the Democrats never letting a good crisis go to waste, they changed the rules of the House so that the members who do have the intestinal fortitude to show up and do their jobs can vote on behalf of up to 10 other members, which is nuts, which is insane. What happens if one of those members says vote no and the other nine say vote yes, and the Democrat who happens to be there goes, yeah, 10 yeses, all yeses, go ahead and vote it. What happens then? They're also allowing staff to vote on behalf of members who don't have the balls to show up. Give me a break. We'll get into that. Kevin McCarthy had some great lines in his speech, and I like to play whole speeches if I can. It's not too long, but it's long. But there are some great lines in there. These people, they hammer the checks. They take the direct deposits. They take the money. They just won't do the damn job. Well, if you don't want to come to Washington, D.C. to do the job you campaigned for because you're scared or whatever, resign. It's pretty simple. Resign. You're not sentenced to be a member of Congress. You choose to be a member of Congress. So we'll get into that. I don't mean to start rambling about it before we get into the speech and the concept. We also have some amazing statistics from the pandemic that make you realize that the politicians really screwed up and the media helped or enabled them or whatever you want to call it, empowered them. And they're still doing so because they think it will hurt Donald Trump. But facts do not back up most of what we're being told about it's coming for you. It could be you. You must laminate yourself if you are to leave the house. Do not touch anything. They're trying to scare the hell out of you. Be careful, yes. But know the facts so that you can go about your life with a lot more ease. I'd say a little more ease, but I think a lot more ease when you see these numbers or hear them, as it were. So we'll get to that as well. It's just another example of how the left just bad politicians, once they get committed to something, they're all in. You'll not hear a politician go, wow, really screwed up there. We're going to change course. I don't know that I've ever heard a politician say that. So we have that coming up and a bunch more. And thank you guys for downloading, sharing, telling a friend, grabbing your friend's phone and subscribing to it again and all that stuff. Rating and reviewing on iTunes. I love reading the reviews on iTunes. One guy wrote the other day after the Ann Coulter interview, how dare you let Ann on the show? Does your wife have your balls in her purse? She has one. They're too big to wear pants. I can't wear both of them at the same time. So I give her one. You know, why not? She's got a big purse. She can carry it around. Just What inspires people to write reviews? I don't get out there. Somebody disagreed with me and you didn't call her a bitch. Well, she's a friend of mine. There are lots of friends of mine who I don't agree with on everything. And so what? Big deal. My God, if I only hung around. Sadly, some of the most boring people I've ever known in my life are conservatives. Some of the most fun people I've ever known in my life are conservatives as well. It doesn't, just your politics doesn't make you exciting or interesting or fun to be around, enjoyable to watch a movie with or play softball with or drink with or whatever. So, but I appreciate the review. Any review is a review. It's one of the things to say. I don't care what reaction I get from you, as long as I get a reaction from you. Like, but what inspires people to write reviews is, you, why dare you let your daughter speak on the podcast? I didn't pay nothing to hear your daughter speak. You kind of did. I mean, you paid nothing for it, and you hear whatever is said. If that offends you, if a three-year-old offends you reciting the ABCs, then and then watch out. Stay away from children. My God. But first, we got to talk about our lovely, lovely sponsor, Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com. Yes, you wonder, you're sitting around, I'm sluggish. What's going on? Why? I'm eating right. I'm doing good. I don't get what the problem is. But in the middle of the day or the end of the day, I'm getting tired, sluggish. It's not just tired. It's sluggish. Well, it's probably because you've got a coating of obstruction on the insides of your digestive tract. Can I put it that way? Make it artful. Yes, your body, it does. It does a great job of pulling the nutrition out of the food that you eat. But no matter how well you eat, your body gets a nice coating on the inside of your digestive tract, which blocks up some of your body's ability to absorb the nutrition in the food that you eat. Now, think of it as you see a hallway, an empty hallway. That's ideal because there's lots of space to absorb the nutrition. And then imagine posters and pictures all over the walls and the floor and the ceiling. Not everywhere, just all over it, lots of them. And that's what your digestive tract ends up looking like. Life Change Tea is the tea that makes you go. It cleans you out, keeps you regular, and then it frees up, takes those posters off the wall, frees up your digestive tract to absorb more of the nutrition from the food that you're eating, because the food is moving through you one way or the other. Doesn't matter whether you're ready for it or not. So you want to get as much out of it as you can while you have it. That's what Life Change Tea does. You go to GetTheTea.com, yeah, choose your flavor, you enter promo code Derek at checkout, you get free fast shipping on top of a great product. It's a month's supply worth. Use as directed. You'll thank me for it. You'll notice a little more pep in your step, and good for you. Take advantage of it. You get free shipping, so you let the sponsors happy, let them know you heard it from here, that makes us happy, and then you get the product and you're happy. The circle of life continues to roll. GetTheTea.com, promo code Derek at checkout. Okay, this statistic is astonishing. It's something that we knew. You know, I'm not going to be breaking ground here. What we have here, the concept, we knew. But the numbers are what we didn't know. And they're not even complete numbers because several states don't report these numbers for reasons you can probably figure out from the who the governors are in some of them. But it goes and it flies in the face of everything we're told in all the media coverage that we see related to COVID-19. It could take anybody. It'd come for anybody. Everybody's got, not that you can be reckless, not that you can go back to your career as an amateur doorknob licker or anything like that. But the idea that everybody, it does not discriminate, it's the great equalizer, it's this, it's that, it's the other thing. And everybody who's under 30, I think, in this country who has tragically died from COVID-19 has gotten a profile on a nightly newscast or a write-up in a newspaper or magazine. They're documented. They never pointed out that it's really the exception, like really the exception. It is done very specifically. Now, if somebody's older who's famous passes away, they get notice. If somebody, you know, 100 years was the oldest person there, and tragically they were doing fine until this, you see about those. But you really hear about the younger people
who generally had pre-existing conditions, whether they were diagnosed or not. A lot of people have some undiagnosed pre-existing conditions. They're reported on in a way that doesn't talk about how rare it is that someone of their age would pass away from this virus. They're talked about in a way that it could have, you're next. You're probably next. It's coming to get you. So be ready for it. And these statistics show that's garbage. That's absolutely garbage. Avik Roy did a study. He's now head of the Foundation for Research on Equal Opportunity. I don't know. It seems like they could have come up with a better name, but what the hell? They got the funding. He is a very smart guy. Used to be at AEI. Used to be doing health policy exclusively. Great numbers cruncher. Serious, serious data guy. He and his partner, Greg Gervin, conducted a study that as of May 22nd, in the 39 states that currently report numbers of deaths by age and by whether or not they were in a nursing home or a hospital or whatever. And this important 39 states, that means 11 states are holding out their data. This is where it gets mind-blowing. 43% of deaths from COVID-19, the coronavirus, 43% are from 0.6% of the population. 0.6% of the population, they're from nursing homes. 43% of the deaths happen in nursing homes. Nursing home residents are 0.6% of the population. Now, can you imagine that number? Have you heard that number? Have you heard anything close to that number? Now, you probably suspected something like this, maybe not as dramatic as this, but that is astounding. We shut down the entire country for something that is, you're more likely to get hit twice by lightning in the same day than die from it if you are 30 years old and healthy. That is a shocking 0.6% of the population, 43% of the deaths. Now, I'm not saying, you know, screw it, let's all go to a party and have a makeout contest or anything like that. But the idea that we couldn't have protected the vulnerable is insane. The 0.6% of the population that is most vulnerable. Yes, there are going to be 40 and 50 and 60 year olds who die, diabetics, whatever it is that they don't even really know. They have a vague idea of what the pre-existing conditions are. But whatever it is, we could find it. We could take extra steps to protect them. And people, it's ultimately up to you. So if you are 60 years old and overweight, it's up to you to take care of yourself and make sure that you're washing your hands, make sure you're not around anybody who's sick, do all those things that everybody knows stops the spread of viruses. But we as a society would have happily chipped in as well. We would have done our part. Yet, instead, everybody was told to stay home. And we're still being sold this bill of goods that it's coming to get you. It could get you. You got to be careful. You got to watch out. Yes, be careful, but it's not coming to get you. It's not coming to get you unless you are elderly and in a nursing home. And let's be honest, people in nursing, I'm not talking about the villages. I'm not talking about a nice retirement community. I'm talking about nursing homes. Nursing homes are for people who are not doing well. They can't take care of themselves. They can't live alone. It's tough to deal with, you know, it's tough to care for them living with a child or something like that. At least I assume. I mean, sometimes they're just bad kids that throw these things in there. But I want to go by a couple of states here that have gotten a lot of press and show you just how much the disconnect between the reporting that is done on coronavirus deaths and the statistics that Avik Roy found. Let's just start with the big one, New York State. New York State has been decimated but only 13.8% of their deaths. This is where the New York gets in. I wanted to start with New York because it's an anomaly of the big states with a lot of deaths. 13.8% of their deaths are in long-term care facilities of one type or another. Only 13.8% in a nation where 43% of the deaths are in these long-term care facilities. What is going on in New York needs study. It could be that New Yorkers are simply the least healthy people on the planet. I don't know that I've ever seen that study. Every year you see a report about, well, this state's the fattest. This state's the thisest, the thattest. I don't remember seeing New York State being the fattest. Now, most of this is concentrated in the New York City area. And if you've been to New York City, most people aren't morbidly obese. They're walking all the time. But the thing is, they're also taking public transportation. They're also living on top of each other. That, I think, is also a major, major factor. Most of the rest of the country does not happen that way. So New York is the anomaly at 13.8%. And imagine if the statistic held true for, and they had a lot of deaths in nursing homes. They just happened to have a lot of deaths. They had more deaths than anybody by a long shot. So what happened in New York is actually a testament against liberal green agenda crap, where they want to herd everybody into cities. They want to force, take public transportation. It's the way to go. It's so green. No, it's apparently the key to death is packed public transportation. Be curious to see, once life starts returning to normal up in New York, how many people actually ride the subway, if ever, again. I think a lot of people have left New York. I think a lot more people are going to leave New York. They're going to try and find a way to do their job remotely or just get a new job someplace else. They're not going to want to be there anymore, because New York is the one state. New York actually has by far the lowest percentages of deaths in long-term care facilities, even though they have by far the highest number of deaths in long-term care facilities. 6,000 dead just in long-term care facilities. That gives you an idea of how many people have died in the state of New York. But as far as states that are really, really being hammered by nursing home deaths, by long-term care facilities, Minnesota, 81.4% of the deaths in Minnesota. Now, you would think that Minnesota is a cold weather area. And if it acted, if COVID-19 acted like the flu, which it probably did, and spread, because people are indoors and it's cold, or was cold there in the winter and the early spring, that number wouldn't be as high as 81.4%. But that number is so high, that being so high really illustrates how dangerous this is to the elderly with pre-existing conditions. And conversely, how, I don't want to say not dangerous, but there's really not a better word for it. And it's not, certainly not harmless, but how undangerous it is to everybody else. You're inside. They had a winter. My dad is up that high in Michigan, as far as, the latitude and longitude. It was a tough winter. Lots of snow, lots of staying inside, and cold spread in that environment, and flus spread in that environment, and COVID spreads the same way those do. Yet 81.4% of the deaths in Minnesota were in long-term care facilities. That's astonishing. That's huge. And actually, it's pretty common in other states where they had a really high percentage of people die in long-term care facilities were in places that get harsh winters. Ohio, 70%. Michigan didn't report numbers. Governor Adolf Whitmer up there, Whitler, doesn't want those numbers out there because she ordered 6 seniors into nursing homes. She probably doesn't want that particularly known. Washington State, 61% of their deaths in nursing homes. Pennsylvania, 69.2%. Massachusetts, 62%. Vermont, I guess that's Vermont, 70%, Rhode Island, 77%, and Virginia. How the hell could I look at Virginia and think Michigan? Virginia, 73%, and North Carolina, 63% for both of them. Those places, with the exception of North Carolina and really Virginia, have winters. They get ravaged every flu season, every cold season. Yet it didn't ravage the general population the way it did long-term care facilities. You would never know that by watching the media coverage. You would literally think we need to close preschools. We need to close elementary, junior high, high schools, everything. Everybody out there with lungs needs to be secluded from now until eternity. When in reality, the picture is becoming clearer and clearer and clearer that the numbers show we have to act decisively and quickly, because some of these states still are screwing up, to protect the most vulnerable. And we know who the most vulnerable are when 0.6% of the population is accounting for 43% of the deaths. The rest, we still have to study. Age is still a factor. There are still elderly who do not live in long-term care facilities who have died and are dying from COVID-19. But most of the time, the pre-existing conditions rule rings true. And we just have to make sure, A, you know your health situation, and B, everybody is courteous and considerate about how they interact with people, particularly people who are compromised in one way or another. You know, I might have mentioned this on the show before, but I see these people, and I get the frustration. I really do. That they go, the one most famous one is one of the most, it's the worst examples, but it's the most famous one. It's that jackass in Costco who's filming himself, thinking somehow this is going to get him laid or something. I don't know what you think who you're impressing, but he's sitting there, and the guy who works at Costco is saying, "Sir, you have to put on the mask or you have to leave. Company policy says you have to wear a mask." And he turns the camera phone on himself and says, "I woke up this morning in a free country. If I don't want to wear a mask, I don't have to wear a mask." And he's absolutely right. If you don't want to wear a mask, you don't have to wear a mask. And you're absolutely right again that you did, in fact, wake up in a free country. But an important part of a free country, a crucial part, a necessary part of living in a free country, is private property rights. Right? Private property rights. Now, if you're in a park and somebody comes along and tackles you and tells you to put on a mask or get the hell out of the park, you got a great case. If it's cops harassing you in a park, in a public space, to say, put a mask on or get the hell out of here or we're going to give you a big ticket, you got a wonderful case. And even I think, as a bad lawyer who's not a lawyer at all, could argue a case there for your individual liberty and likely win. When you're going into a store that is not a public space in that it is publicly owned, it is private property open to the public on certain conditions. You know, we're all used to no shirt, no shoes, no service. Okay, we get that. Nobody's arguing that nudists should be in line in front of you and your family at a 7-Eleven or a Taco Bell, right? So think of it in those terms. Costco, you don't have to enter. You don't have to go into. As a condition of entering their private property, they have decided, whether you like it or not, and they didn't do it to make you angry, whether you like it or not, that on condition of entering their property, you have to be wearing a mask. You can resign your Costco membership. You can get a prorated refund based on when you last signed up. And you can go to Sam's Club or wherever else that might not allow or might let you in without a mask. But the idea that you have a right to enter somebody's home or business or anything that is not yours or publicly owned without a mask just because you want to is false. If you oppose, and I know a lot of people are going to be angry about this, but if you oppose somebody being told to bake a cake that they don't want to bake, that their religion or their deeply held beliefs or whatever they don't want, they've decided they don't want to bake that cake. If you oppose people being forced to bake cake, it's the same concept. The baker should be allowed to do whatever the hell they want to do. They're not hurting anybody. You can go someplace else. Most of these times these bakers are targeted specifically because they're Christian. Anyway, not a lot of lawsuits against Muslim bakers, by the way. But you can't say he doesn't have to bake the cake because he's a free individual. It's his business. He can run it how he sees fit. And then say Costco has to let me in if I don't want to wear a mask, even though it's their corporate policy that you have to wear a mask. You can argue against it. You can try and petition Costco to change it. You can resign in disgust or in protest. You can do whatever you want short of whatever you want to do inside a private space. Private property rights are wildly important. If I go into your house, I don't get to dictate terms. If you come into mine, you don't get to dictate terms. Why? Not because of a common courtesy, although it really has extended that as part of civil society. It's because it's mine, it's yours. You set your standards, I set my standards. You come into my house, you take your shoes off. You don't have to take your shoes off if you come into my house, but I'm just using it as an example. We've all been to those houses where you're like, as soon as you walk in the door, will you take your shoes off? And it's like, come on, man, what? Your carpet is not new. You got hardwood floors. I'm not stepping in dog crap. My shoes are, and everybody, will you take your shoes off? You take your shoes off? And you do it. And you're sitting there and you go, shit, I wore holy socks today. I shouldn't have. Oh, God. Why do we have to do the, grouse and moan? But you take your shoes off. Why? Because it's their house. What are you going to do? You're going to say, I'm a free American. This is the United States of America. I don't have to uncover my feet if I don't want to uncover my feet, you son of a bitch. And who do you think you are talking to me like that? I pay taxes and blah, blah. No. You take your shoes off. If it's so bad that you've got like stink ass feet with corns all over it and gross, then you go, I'm going to go home. I'm not going to go, but I'm not going to take my shoes off. But those are the rules. You don't have to like them, but you don't get to ignore them. That's just the same philosophy I have towards people who want to change the laws and then ignore the law as written. They don't really want to change the law. They just don't want the law to be what it is. The Obama administration on the Defense of Marriage Act. They decided that the Defense of Marriage Act was unconstitutional. The Supreme Court ultimately did too, but that's beside the point. They were not elected to determine what is and isn't constitutional and govern accordingly. They decided that they were not going to defend the Defense of Marriage Act. They're just going to ignore it. You don't get to do that. If you don't like a law, try to change the law. Same with marijuana law. You want to be able to smoke weed for fun and whatever you want to, whenever you want to do it, that's fine. If that's what you want to do and you want to dedicate your life to trying to change the laws, then go ahead. But know that until you get the law changed, you're walking down the street with a big ass blunt hanging out of your mouth, smoking away, a cop rolls along, you're probably not going to enjoy the interaction that you have with that cop. Nor should you, because it's against the law. You can dislike the law, you can think the law is wrong and immoral, all you want. But as long as it's the law, it's the law. You can thwart it, you can probably get away with it. Most of the time, unless you're really blatant and a complete jackass about it, the cops are going to ignore you anyway. But and not really enforce the law anyway. But as long as it's on the books, you have to understand that there's a possibility that you could face negative consequences for flouting the law. That's just the way the world works. So the same goes with masks. If it's corporate policy, go ahead and do it. Or don't go to the store. Take your stand on principle. protest and do it, and more power to you. But you don't get to just go, I don't wear masks and I'm coming into your store. You don't have a right to enter that store. That's private property. They set the terms. You don't get to kick your shoes off and drop your pants, walk into a McDonald's and order a Happy Meal, because that'd be really weird on top of the no nudity policy while you're eating in McDonald's. So there you go. You can send all your email hate to Derek@dailycaller.com and lecture me about how you can do this and how you can do that and how you can do the other thing. But I don't really think you're going to convince me, because I think what I'm saying is common sense. Would you let, if you had a policy to take your shoes off when somebody came into your house and somebody comes over and says, screw that, I'm taking my shoes off, are you just going to go, oh, well, all right, go ahead. And then you're having a party and that one person starts walking around with shoes and everybody goes, well, what the hell am I doing with my bare feet? Or new people come in, like, well, I don't have to take my shoes off. For whatever weird, neat freak reason you want your shoes off, just vacuum, for God's sakes. Or sweep, or whatever the problem is. Anyway, I thought that that statistic was telling and important to know, because the media isn't going to report it. Not widely, not wildly, not regularly. Because it doesn't advance the narrative that we need the lockdowns to continue in perpetuity, which is what people who make a lot of money and are still being paid seem to want. They don't give a damn about you. They just want control. And Democrats want to damage the economy so they can damage the impact of the possibility of President Trump getting reelected. It's rather disgusting if you think about it. Speaking of rather disgusting, the governor of New York was in Washington, D.C. yesterday. He met with the president at the White House. Who knows what they talked about? And then he went to the National Press Club. Now, where's all the outrage that he's traveling to Washington, D.C. and then doing an event at the National Press Club? Shouldn't he be, you know, up there mourning everything? Where's the outrage when he goes on his brother's TV show and they goof around and clown around and go, ha, ha, aren't we funny? We're brothers. People are dying left and right. Whenever Donald Trump does anything that isn't, you know, completely wrapped in mourning, the left goes, hey, can you believe he's doing this at a time when 100,000 Americans have died? And in their voice, you can hear there's a little bit of sexual arousal at that 100,000 number. There really is. There's very sick people. Well, the governor of New York is still running around trying to absolve himself from responsibility in the deaths of 6,000 plus people in nursing homes in New York State as a direct result of his orders. I guess he could come out and say, hey, it's the smallest percentage in the country of people who died in nursing homes. We could have killed a hell of a lot more. But whatever we did stopped that, or probably wouldn't be the most politically advantageous thing to say. But he would likely get away with it because he's Andrew Cuomo. He's the anti-Trump. He's the hero. Instead, he's out there saying that the Trump administration is to blame for the deaths in nursing homes because they made him put sick people in those nursing homes, which isn't true. Other states didn't do it. And it took him two months. To rescind that order, and then his government has wiped clean that order from official government websites. It's kind of funny. It was up there. It was up there just the other day, and then suddenly it disappeared. Huh. Like it never even happened. Well, the issue came up briefly in his press conference at the National Press Club. And this time, rather than blaming the Trump administration, which he tried last week, and people kind of noticed, hey, it wasn't really pointed out by reporters, but it was noticed by human beings. It said, wait a second, Florida didn't do this. A lot of other states didn't do this. There's no real order that you've got to send sick people into nursing homes. So he's changing his tactic. Instead of blaming the Trump administration, Governor Cuomo is blaming the nursing homes themselves. Now, keep in mind, what you're about to hear is a very short clip, but it was his order that made it illegal for nursing homes to not accept COVID positive patients. Illegal, not, and I've read you the order here on the show. It's still out there in screen captures. You can read it for yourself, and nowhere in it does it say, but if you can't handle it, we'll go ahead and hook you up or put them someplace else. It says you must take these people in. So here is the governor of New York, the hero of the left, basically blame shifting yet again, this time to nursing homes. Hey, man, if they couldn't have handled it, they should have said something rather than, you know, just compl- because, you know, Democrats are really tolerant of people who say it's difficult, if not impossible, to comply with their orders. Here's Andrew Cuomo from yesterday.
The nursing home, the obligation is on the nursing home to say, I can't take a COVID positive person. I'm too crowded. I'm too busy. I don't have enough PPE. Whatever the answer is, doesn't even matter. It's if they say I can't take the person, they can't take the person. So that's how it worked.
Hey, it's their fault for not speaking up to a giant bureaucracy that didn't give a damn, that would order them into them in the first place. It's just, you know, they should have spoken up. Well, they were screaming, Governor. You, at a press conference a month after you ordered this death sentence, claimed you didn't even know about this order. What order? I don't know nothing about no order. And then it took you a full month after that to rescind it. Upon hearing about the COVID patients being ordered into nursing homes in New York State, when you first said, hey, I don't know what's going on here, first I'm hearing about it, should you not have then gone immediately to your staff and said, what in the hell are they talking about? Are we sending people who are sick into nursing homes? That's insane. Find out if this is true, and if it's true, we have to stop it. That should have been your first and really your only order of business after that press conference, Governor, but it wasn't your first or only or really any order after that press conference. It took you, again, a full month after that to bother getting around to rescinding it, and that only came after you were starting to get bad press on it. 2 months of the media largely ignoring it, with the exception of the New York Post. Then the New York Post really goes all in for it, and suddenly something happens. Other newspapers said, oh yeah, by the way, he's ordered sick people into these nursing homes. And you thought, oh crap, there go my chances. They're dimming, they're damning, there's trouble. We've got to do something about this. And only then did you do that. By the way, you only did that a week after you ordered the subways cleaned, the subway cars cleaned. Took you 2 months to get that done, too, in a time of a pandemic. The subways were running 24 hours a day, and then finally, 2 months in, you said, we're hit worse than most countries. We got more deaths in here than in any other state and any other place, really. Hey, let's look into Lysoling down, put some Ajax on those sardine cans people are still cramming into. How about we do that? But he's governor. He was governor swipe right because he was voted the most eligible bachelor in New York by the media. Now he's really governor. I wasn't in town that month. Governor, somebody else did it. He walks away. He accepts all the glory. For whatever. I don't even know what the hell you would get glory for in New York, considering the numbers and the dead and the infected in the state of New York. Where in the hell is this glory coming from? What is it? His glory is he is so presidential. He's so different from Donald Trump. But look at the numbers. Look at the facts. Look at his press conferences. Look at what he says and tell me that's the guy. That should be the captain of the ship. He should not be allowed on the ship, let alone be considered captain of any ship. Maybe the good ship Lollipop or the SS Minnow. But my God, he's sitting there. Well, look, man, I wasn't in town that month. All we did was mandate that sick people go to nursing homes. If those nursing homes didn't bitch loud enough, what do you want me to do about it? I would like you to be aware of the impact of your orders. I would like you to be aware of the fact that you were ordering sick people into nursing homes at a time when you knew full well those were the most vulnerable by far in the world for COVID-19. I'd like you to think maybe, hey, is this a good idea? Now, if you could cite some study that says this is the smashing idea that was just wrong, maybe we could talk. But he can't. He just did it in a panic. Oh my God, the hospitals are going to fill up. We got to free up as many beds as we can. The senior citizens, let's just get rid of them. If we can get rid of those thousands, those 4,500 senior citizens who are sick that we know of so far, if we can get rid of them, send them back to their nursing homes. The nursing, and it's nurse right there in the name. Why, it's just like a hospital, except nowhere near a hospital with a history of abuse. Let's send them back to their nursing homes. There we go. That'll solve that problem. 4,500 beds freed up. While we've got, you know, makeshift hospitals and hospitals built all over the place and the comfort out there in the bay and you got more hospital beds than you ever came close to needing. He couldn't, he can't, he won't, and he really doesn't have to in the grand scheme of things, have to admit that he screwed up, that he did serious damage, that his actions were bad, that they were wrong. Suddenly, Andrew Cuomo becomes Arthur Fonzarelli when it becomes time to, except Fonzie would eventually apologize. Andrew Cuomo isn't even being asked to apologize. He is being asked by a compliant and friendly press to try and explain it away. Look, can we finally, can you give us an answer that can put this to bed? And he can't do it. Look, the nursing home should have said it's the Trump administration's fault. I wasn't even in town that month. He can't come up with a viable excuse or explanation because there really is no viable excuse or explanation. He screwed up. He screwed up bad, and he killed a lot of people as a result of that decision. Is it done in malice? No, it wasn't done in malice. It was done in panic. But his narrative, his brand, if you will, is he is the rock steady leader as opposed to Donald Trump, who goes on Twitter and says mean things in the middle of a pandemic. I'd rather have a guy who spends time tweeting mean things about Joe Scarborough and, you know, overseeing a government that's doing a damn fine job than I would have a guy who gives a really great performance, really nerve-steadying performance in a press conference, and meanwhile, he's ordering seniors to their deaths, like the duck swimming above water. Why, it's nice, calm, cool duck just swimming. Look at that mallard there. And then below the surface, the legs are going a million miles an hour. That's Andrew Cuomo. Behind the scenes, things are getting hectic, things are getting screwed up, and he's at the press conference, and he's on Twitter, and he's saying, we should wear masks, make sure to wash your hands, we must protect the most vulnerable among us. And meanwhile, he's launching them on a trebuchet out into the Atlantic Ocean. But that Atlantic Ocean is all COVID-19 viruses. It's disgusting. And the I don't know which is more disgusting, Andrew Cuomo trying to pull this crap or the compliant media going, well, all right, he gave another bite at the apple. That's a viable answer. We'll take that and move on. Both are really just sick, to be perfectly honest with you. Speaking of sick, Nancy Pelosi. Nancy, fancy Nancy Pelosi. She was having a press conference. Like I said, the House is now free to not show up to work. You can vote by proxy, which means you can empower somebody else to do it. If for any reason you don't want to go to the House, you can just text your vote in. You can email your vote in. If you can't do that, you can tell a buddy, hey, go and vote for me, another member of Congress. They can vote for up to 10 members of Congress. They can also have their staff, if they can't reach anybody for whatever reason, they have empowered staff now in the House of Representatives. Say you're a member of the House from California and you just don't feel like going all the way out to Washington to vote this week. Why would you? You'll flip on C-SPAN, you'll float in your pool, and when it comes time to vote, you'll make sure that your junior staff member, your legislative assistant or staff ass as a staff assistant, we'll go down there and they'll vote on your behalf. And you get full pay, by the way. You're fully paid. It is a scam. And Kevin McCarthy, the leader of the Republicans in the House of Representatives, called them out on it big time today. It's a little long here, this audio, but it's worth hearing the whole thing just because some of the lines in it are so damn good, I wish I'd come up with them. It was happening in real time, so he was dealing with real things happening around him. But listen to Kevin McCarthy from yesterday talking about the idea of voting by proxy, how it's unconstitutional, never been done before, and somehow in times of emergency and national issues, we've always managed to convene Congress. But because Democrats just don't want to, they don't have to anymore. They change the rules.
Let's go through the facts. The Constitution requires in-person assembly. If you hang your hat on the House can make their own rules, then why don't you make a rule that Republicans can't vote? Why don't you make a rule that women can't vote? You can make the rules, but you can't make unconstitutional rules. The Constitution deals with this and tells us we should assemble. Yes, that's why August 14th, after this building burned in 1812, the War of 1812 and 1814, they still convened. It wasn't here, but it was in a hotel. But you think, oh, modern history allows us to do this. Well, you know what your modern history allows people to do? If the member can't vote on the proxy, you allow the staff to do it. That's literally what your rule says. If you don't have it, I'll put it in record right here. It states, I'll underline it, and I'll provide it to you. If you want to read it out loud, you're more than welcome. If a member cannot provide electronically, a staff is allowed to put the vote across. That's what you wrote. That's what you passed. Even one proxy vote dilutes the voting power of every member. We have an unbelievable country that people lend their power and voice to members of Congress, be you a congresswoman, a congressman, and hold you accountable every 2 years. You're going to have people on this floor voting for more than five members from five different states. In California alone, your largest delegation, more than half of the Democrats stayed home. I'll guarantee you they all cashed their check this month. That means 19 million people in California will not have their voice heard. Maybe somebody from Connecticut will vote for him. More than 70 members will vote by proxy. That's 49 million Americans who did not count because you gave it to somebody else. But you should be proud of that. Proxy votes have never been allowed to count towards quorum. But what are you going to do on this rule? There will be more bodies voting no than voting yes, but you're going to win because you got a vote in the pocket. The Democrat plan permits a staffer to vote by proxy on behalf of a member who is unavailable. That is totally true. It's in the rules right here, and I'll provide it to you. A member, let me read it to you since you have a hard time reading. If a member is unavailable to email or send a text message, a staff member may transmit the instructions at the direction of the member. Is that a staff member? Does that say anywhere in there that only a member can vote? I have not yielded my time, but I read your words. A member can vote by proxy while attending a political fundraiser under this plan. A member could be at a fundraiser watching on television, said, well, let me pause for one moment. I didn't want to go back to D.C. even though you asked me to, but I need to put my vote in. It's okay. I'll give somebody from another state to do it. The McGovern regulations state that members can only vote using proxy voting if they are physically unable to make it to the Capitol. I don't know what happened in the last 2 weeks when only 12 could not make it. But now more than 70. I'm concerned for them. Must be something very serious. All members had nearly 2 weeks' notice ahead for this vote. 2 weeks you had to plan. For 231 years, members found a way to get to D.C. If this rule or bill passes, it'll only be because of proxy votes will make up the difference. So my friend over there thinks someone is going to vote differently. Yeah, they are. Even on the Senate side, they've told you, whatever you pass in here under these rules are not constitutional. If you can make this type of rule, you can make anything. People with glasses can't vote. Unheard of. Yes, we raised a lawsuit. Yes, we believe in a previous question that people should vote no on this. It's a violation of the Constitution. It's a dereliction of a duty of elected officials. It will silence the voice of people, the same constituents that you took the oath to represent. I think of all the things this country had challenges with. Never did this body not find it was essential to meet. Never did they question to change the rule to empower one over another. But they have done just that. They have done just that. If you are a member of Congress, if you are home sitting there because you cannot make it, and you think you're going to send your message to your staffer to send it in, you might want to change, because maybe McGovern will change the rules now. When you were sworn in, you upheld your hand to uphold the Constitution. This is your moment. This is your time. Read Article 1, Section 4, Section 5, and Section 6. We even compel people to go gather you to bring you to these chambers. What's interesting to me is that the other side is willing to endanger our Constitution just to empower more power to the majority itself. It'll be interesting to see those who go back to their constituents and say, I will represent you because I can just phone it in. I deserve to be reelected because I passed this off to another member to vote for you. It's interesting to find that maybe when you raised your hand, maybe when you thought the Constitution changed, it hasn't. So yes, just as the majority leader said, he wants you to look into your heart to how you're going to vote, do that. I hope we all come back to this floor and we all look up. I'm not sure how the vote will go. Will you have a little P by the name that says a proxy? Will we be able to tell by a proxy that somebody from another state voted for you so the rest of the country can see? How will you tell the country today that's opening up more, that's sending astronauts to the space, that you want to close Congress further, and you want to deny their voice one last time? This is not about opening a campus. This is about restoring the voice to the American public that we have done for 231 years. And for you to ever question who wants to meet, let the public just see the scoreboard at the end of the day. I think it's easy to answer that question, not by voice, but simply by your feet, who's willing to show and who's willing to work for them. I yield back.
Kevin McCarthy, if there had been people allowed in the chamber, I'd imagine a lot of them would have broken out into applause. Do you imagine having a job where you get to set your own rules, by the way, and you can say, hey, I don't want to go to work today. Okay, well, then don't worry. There's been a tradition of people showing up to work in much worse situations than this. But hey, you go ahead and stay there. You just call a junior staffer or call one of your buddies, call one of your colleagues, and we'll just let them vote on your behalf. You just stay home, enjoy your pool, enjoy your pajamas, whatever the hell you're wearing. You go, you do you, and we'll take care of it. You imagine that? If you propose that to your boss, he tore you out on your ass. But if your boss is Nancy Pelosi, she goes, I'm dreaming of that $22,000 refrigerator I have in with like a grand worth of ice cream in the bottom. Yeah, let's do that. I'm old. I don't want to come into work either. What the hell? Let's just move Congress online. What are we paying these people for? I mean, that's a question that is an evergreen question, but this time it's very, very specific. Ask, what in the hell are we paying these people for? Because I don't know. I haven't known for a while, but now I really don't know, because now they weren't doing their jobs before. Now they've set the rules up so they don't have to do their jobs. It's absolutely amazing. Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi, at a press conference yesterday, reiterated once again one of her favorite themes, one of Democrats' favorite things. Never let a good crisis go to waste. There's opportunities in this coronavirus pandemic to push through a liberal agenda, basically putting out the siren call. Hey, lefty groups, lefty lobbyists, every company that wants government to abuse its power to empower that company, you'd better open up them checkbooks and start throwing money our way. And if you do that, then we can give you what you want, and we can throw you more money if you want. We can do all sorts of things. Let's work together. It's the subtext of what she says here. It's not exactly what she said. She's too smart for that, but we can see right through it. Here's Nancy.
We have to open the economy. We have to do so in a way that gives more opportunity for access to care, to credit, to opportunity in our country. Because as Mr. Clyburn said, this is an opportunity. Every crisis is.
This is an opportunity. Oh, it's like Christmas in May. My God. Come one, come all. Open your checkbooks, donate to Democrats, and we shall fund your pet project. We shall grant your government contracts. You get a car. You get a car. Suddenly she's Oprah. She just wants to give everything away. This is insane. This is who they are. Never let a good crisis go to waste, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to the... And by the way, she had a smile on her face, kind of a laughing smile that... in fairness to her, it could just be that she recently got Botox. It's hard to read her face because it doesn't move all that much. But it was a smile. It was a gleeful smile. Her face was glistening. Oh, this is an opportunity. We can give people credit and health care and all that. Credit. You're printing money. Money's going to be worthless soon if you keep going the way you're going. What are you going to do? Underwrite a whole bunch of loans and then say, don't worry, we'll forgive you those loans? You're already trying to do that with student loans. You're pushing to do that with mortgages. They're insane, these people. And creepy and gross and everything wrong in the world. Speaking of creepy and gross, I got two Joe Biden clips I want to play. He gave an interview to CNN. It was a softball interview. Dana Bash asked him about masks and what are they manly? Are they not manly? What are the sign of weakness? I mean, honestly, this is the best question you can come up with. Dana Bash is supposed to be a serious, serious journalist. Just ask her. And these are the questions you're asking the presumptive Democratic nominee? What about these masks? Do you think it's president should wear a mask? Yes, that's what's... Is there anybody outside of media who gives one steaming pile of dog crap that the president of the United States doesn't wear masks everywhere he goes? There was a story yesterday or the other day about Melania Trump wears a mask in Marine One when they were going off to Maryland, but she didn't wear a mask when she walked to Marine One. Because she was outside walking with her husband. When she's in Marine One, there's a whole bunch of people in there who she doesn't live with, who isn't her husband. So, then you should wear a mask. At home, are you supposed to wear masks? That they think that this stuff is a story, that they think that people care about this, is insane. And if anybody does care about this, they are insane. Anyway, here's Dana Bash asking Joe Biden about masks, and see if you can make any sense out of what the analogy Joe Biden tries to make here about a ball and getting hit, and I don't know what the hell he's talking about. And Dana Bash is kind of looking like, what the fuck are you talking about, old man? Here's Joe.
Better
off.
So
do you think wearing a mask projects strength or weakness?
Leadership. What it presents and projects is leadership. Presidents are supposed to lead, not engage in folly and be falsely masculine. It reminds me of the guys that I grew up with playing ball. They'd walk around with a ball in their hand, but they didn't like to hit very much.
Let's talk about...
I left that last bit in there so you could see how long the pause was where Dana Bash is sitting there going, what the hell? What are you talking about, old man? Ball and hit and what game? What ball? Playing ball. Well, you know, just playing ball. you know, ball and a stick and a hoop and a stick. And why, when we wore petticoats, when we were like, what? Where? Old timey weird thing. What planet did Joe Biden grow up on? Reminds me of the guys when I was growing up, they'd carry a ball around and you'd say, hey, what's that ball? And they'd go, I'm Corn Pop. And you called me some swimmer, so I'm going to kill you. And I said, I'm sorry. And suddenly we became friends. And you're just like, what? This guy on a debate stage, the Democrats want the lockdowns to continue, not just to damage the economy, to hurt Trump's reelection campaign. They want to continue the lockdown, and they hope the pandemic continues to grow because they don't want Joe Biden anywhere near a debate stage with Donald Trump. Because there's a chance he'll shart on him. What am I talking about? In another video chat that he did with the governor of Pennsylvania, where he didn't mention the dead in nursing homes, oddly enough, another governor that ordered sick people into nursing homes, and it's a vast majority of their deaths. There's internet reports. Now, you can hear it for yourself and make up your own mind, but it harkens back to the Eric Swalwell or Chris Matthews fart on Hardball about, 6 months ago now, if not longer. There are people saying that Joe Biden sharted, which is a cross between a shit and a fart. You can decide for yourself, America. Here's the audio. Programs.
Or stop work on roads and bridges. So what does the human cost?
That is not doctored. And the governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, he kind of did one of those winky blinks like, what the hell was that noise? Joe didn't miss a beat. Joe might not know what's going on down in his drawers. Who knows? But was it a fart? Was it a shart? Was it, I don't know what else it could be. Someone making a fart noise. We will never know because Joe Biden doesn't remember the interview at all. That is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and all that good stuff. We'll be back tomorrow with the interview edition of the program. Pete Hegseth from Fox News. Thank you. I'll see you tomorrow.